next case to be heard is 2014-963, Rural Health Collaborative versus the Tax Commissioner. No rush. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you're ready, Mr. Ebersole.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Master Commissioner and Mayor, I'd like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal time. Now, in this appeal, we revisit the question as to whether property used exclusively to provide dialysis care under a policy that discriminates against those who cannot pay constitutes property used exclusively for charitable purposes. It does not. Pursuant to this court's uniform body of controlling case law, most recently the Dialysis Clinic, Inc. versus Levin case in 2010, property used to provide dialysis care under a policy that discriminates against those who cannot pay does not constitute exclusive charitable use of property. Now, the Dialysis Clinic, Inc. versus Levin case is really on point in this case. In that case, we had the exact same healthcare provider, Dialysis Clinic, Inc., or DCI as I'll call it, providing care pursuant to the exact same anti-charity care policy that provides that it is not a charity or gift to patients, and that DCI reserves all rights to treat or admit patients who cannot afford to pay. And because the care rendered pursuant to that policy did not comport with the definition of charity care set forth in the Vic Memorial Hospital case, and more recently, which provides that healthcare provided on a non-profit basis to people without regard for ability to pay, among other restrictions, is charitable, because the dialysis care in the Dialysis Clinic, Inc. versus Levin case did not comport with that.
But of course, the difference in this case is that we have a landlord of the property, which is not DCI itself.
Right. So the major distinguishing feature in this case is that there is a landlord, Rural Health Collaborative of Southern Ohio, Inc., or as I'll call it, RHC Realty, that holds and leases the property to DCI to own and operate, whereas in the DCI case, we had just DCI owning and operating the property. And that really doesn't change the use of the property, which is always going to be the touchstone of Ohio real property tax exemption law, is the use of the property. And that non-charitable use is the use of the property in this case, just as it was in the last case. Now, the Board of Tax Appeals lost its way, finding that the presence of that landlord and that lease, that piece of paper, did distinguish this case. And I say lost its way, by the way, because not only did the board deviate from this court's controlling precedent, but it deviated from its own precedent in the Dialysis Clinic, Inc. case and in cases bookending the board's decision in this case. In the Chagrin Realty versus Testa case, issued about a week and a half prior to the decision in this case, we had a very similar situation with a lease, a landlord and a lease to a dialysis care provider that was denied exemption. And about 6 months later, following the board's decision, we had the Dialysis Centers of Dayton case, which is currently on appeal to this court, where the board again denied exemption. So this is really an outlier case. And what the board did in this case is held that due to the presence of that lease, the board determined that it didn't matter whether DCI was that they were a non-charitable institution, right? There's no objection to the Dialysis Clinic, Inc. Case as good law. You know, all the parties agree that that is still good law. The argument by the board and by my colleague on the other side is that it doesn't matter that DCI is not a charitable institution. And it does matter, because under the statute that provides charitable exemption for leased property, and I'm referring to 5709.121A1, the lessee of the property must be a charitable institution. And here DCI is not.
Now, was that point made in the final determination by the commissioner, or has that been raised later in the case?
That DCI is not a charitable institution? Well, the final determination...
Well, specifically the citation to, I think it's A1 of 5709.121, the leasehold provision.
Right. As I recall, the final determination does not distinguish between the two provisions in 5709.121, it's A1 and A2, but it just denies exemption pursuant to 121 and with reference to the Dialysis Clinic Inc. case. And really, if we analyze the situation under A2, as the board did, exemption is defeated under that provision as well. But I can first say that the non-charitable status of DCI independently defeats exemption under A1, and then under both provisions...
That would certainly be the case,
right?
Because directly of the holding of DCI.
Right. And nothing's changed from the 2004 tax year. Nothing material has changed.
But you would also have to agree, wouldn't you, that A2 is a somewhat broader exemption provision than A1?
Well, it's a separate provision, Your Honor. I'm not sure if I would agree that it's broader. It provides exemption for real property under the direction or control of a charitable institution and made available under the direction or control of a charitable institution for use in furtherance of or incidental to charitable purposes and not with a view to profit. Now, I'll just put aside for a moment the...
But the person who's using the property would not have to itself be a charitable institution, necessarily, under A2.
Under A2, it's not clear whether the person providing dialysis care, if that's how you're using use in this context, it's not clear whether that person would have to be, that entity would have to be a charitable institution. But exemption is defeated under A2 for several reasons. And putting aside for a moment that RHC Realty is not a charitable institution, which defeats exemption under both provisions, it's not under the direction or control of RHC Realty. RHC Realty has no employees, and there's a lease agreement between the landlord, RHC Realty, and DCI, and this is like any contract that's negotiated ex ante before the provision of dialysis care between two mutually agreed upon parties. You know, it's an arm's length agreement. There's no direction or control on the property of the dialysis care being rendered there. You know, RHC Realty has no employees and no expertise in providing dialysis care. It's all provided by DCI. So that independently defeats exemption under A2. And then if we're looking also at the in furtherance of or incidental to charitable purposes requirement, well, it's important to remember that we're talking about exclusive charitable use under 0.121 A1 or A2. This is a definition of exclusive charitable use pursuant to a strict construction standard for tax exemption statutes, recognizing that exemption is in derogation of the rights of all non-exempt taxpayers. So
But 121 itself, 5709.121 itself, is a statute that defines what that exclusive use is when, the entity is a charitable institution, correct?
That's correct.
So it's a statutory standard here.
Right. And my point is that it's not just any use in furtherance of or incidental to. It's got to be substantial use. It has to be something that rises to the level of that strict construction standard or, there's a quantitative and qualitative, so whether the word level is descriptive, what we're talking about is and that's what RHC Realty is really arguing, that it's any use in furtherance of or incidental to that. Because there's a substantial relationship between the health care provided on the property and the health care mentioned in the articles of incorporation of this holding entity, RHC Realty, that qualitative component establishes for exemption. That's never what this court's held. It's not any use in furtherance of or incidental to. It's a substantial amount of charitable use. And when you look at the use of the property, again, we're always going to be going back to the touchstone of this of real property tax exemption law, the use of the property. In the Dialysis Clinic Inc. case, not only holds that DCI is not a charitable institution, but that very similar, in all material respects, the same use of the property is not exclusive charitable use. So that should really guide the court in this case. And if I could just return...
Well, let's give have an example of a use that qualifies under A2 or potentially qualifies, and that might be a public park. If an institution made a public park available, or say a charitable institution made property available for use by other people in furtherance of its own charitable purposes, the people who are actually there using it as a park might not be engaged in any kind of charitable activity, but it might still qualify.
That's potentially... There's potential for that, and anytime we're talking about publicly held property, there's kind of a different analysis looking at the nature of that publicly held entity that owns a property that's organized exclusively for public purposes, and there's kind of a different component when we're looking at a private entity that, you know, may or may not have those statutory, in most cases, restrictions. So, you know, that park is made available exclusively for public purposes, in your example, and I think that's guiding any sort of determination in that hypothetical. And if I could just return to whether RHC Realty is a charitable institution, I would respectfully disagree with the board's determination that it was. It was certainly an unreasonable and unlawful finding because RHC Realty's core activities are non-charitable, right? The DCI case says that we're going to look to the core activities of an institution to determine whether it is a charitable institution. And when the Board of Tax Appeals did that, it looked to RHC Realty establishing, quote, establishing the dialysis clinic, which is really just another term for leasing activity that is not charitable, because all RHC Realty does is, not all, but nearly all it does, is hold and lease the property to DCI, which, you know, is not a charitable activity, the leasing that is, under Northeast Ohio Psychiatric and many other cases, and I'm referring to paragraph 11. But even if we impute the dialysis care rendered on the property to RHC Realty, and that's not something that's permissible under the Northeast Ohio Psychiatric case, we're not going to impute the activities upon of a lessee upon a lessor for determining charitable institution status. But even if we do, that defeats exemption. Because, again, those dialysis care services are rendered under a discriminatory policy that's not charitable.
Now, the determination whether or not the applicant is a charitable institution, that's going to be a question of fact, right? Whether the court is going to defer to the BTA's determination or not.
Well, I would respectfully disagree with my colleague on the other side. And the question of fact, the Bethesda healthcare case refers to that this is always going to be a facts and circumstances determination as to whether there's a charitable institution and exemption applies. And it cites, and so I would say that this is actually a question of law dependent upon the facts and circumstances of the case to determine whether or not an entity is a charitable institution, to determine whether or not a property is used exclusively for charitable purposes. Now, I expect that my colleague on the other side may cite the O'Brien case or Cleveland Osteopathic, but the most recent pronouncement on this issue is the Bethesda healthcare case, which, you know, it recognizes the Cleveland Osteopathic case and recognizes that this is a legal determination dependent upon the facts and circumstances of the case.
So the determination that an entity that's applying for exemption, whether or not it's a charitable institution, is a question of law as a general matter.
Right, and I think the DCI case guides that into holding that that question of law turns on the core activities of the entity. And in this case, we're looking at leasing activity, which is not charitable, and non-charitable health care that shouldn't be imputed to the holding entity in the first place. And so... really, the presence of that lease doesn't change the non-charitable activity on the property, the controlling nature of Dialysis Clinic, Inc. and the courts and the board's precedent in this case. I'd like to just make one final point that even more clearly than in the DCI case, we have a record that supports the non-charitable nature of the use here. Only 1% of the dialysis charges are written off in this case, which suggests that very few indigents, if any, are treated at this property, right? If we had a higher number of indigents, we'd expect to see a higher amount of charges written off, and we don't see that. And what that is indicative of is very likely a chilling effect that upon seeing this, upon seeing the policy that discriminates against those who cannot pay and may stop care if one cannot afford to pay, patients may self-selectively leave and seek other clinics in the area, in Portsmouth, Columbus, Cincinnati, or other places. So again, the record supports the discriminatory nature of the policy against those who cannot pay, and I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
Thank you, Mr. Ebersole. Mr. Engel. I'd like to ask you right at the outset, what about this question of 5709.121A1 and the leasehold provision there?
May it please the court. I think in response to that is exactly the point that the court hinted at in its questioning, and that is that, first of all, 0.121A1 says, in the case of a lease, this is the situation that may apply. But if the court looks at 121A2, there's nothing there that says this provision does not apply to a lease. There's nothing there that says these provisions are mutually exclusive. And by reading that language into the statute, the tax commissioner is committing the same error that was committed in Cincinnati Community Colel when there was a substantial charitable use requirement read in by the commissioner, and this court soundly rejected that argument. Secondly, and I think equally important, that the brief that the commissioner filed in this court is the first time that that argument's raised. It wasn't in the commissioner's final determination. It wasn't raised to the Board of Tax Appeals. It wasn't addressed by the Board of Tax Appeals. If it hasn't previously been raised and it hasn't previously been addressed, how can it be error for the board not to have decided that? And for those two reasons, we think that that argument simply doesn't apply here. This case is an appeal from the Board of Tax Appeals, where the Board of Tax Appeals determined first that Rural Health Collaborative was a charitable institution. It determined that the clinic was made available under its direction and control, that that availability was in furtherance of and incidental to its charitable purposes, and finally, that the property was not used with a view to profit. That's exactly the analysis the board had to engage in, because the statute, 5739.01 or 121A2, provides that outline. Based upon that statute, based upon a couple of cases that we'll talk about in a moment that are conspicuously absent in the commissioner's argument, and based on the record presented to it, the Board of Tax Appeals decided that those criteria were met and that the exemption was appropriate, and that decision is reasonable and lawful. We've talked briefly about the facts here so far. Rural Health Collaborative was organized in 2001 by three public hospitals and a federal health agency for various purposes. It obtained donated land. It obtained a federal grant to construct this facility to meet an unmet health need in South Central Ohio. Both Rural Health Collaborative and DCI have lost money on the clinic every year that it has operated, except for one. And care has never been refused to any patient for the inability to pay for that. If we look at the statute in question, we have 5709.12 and 5709.121. Clearly, 5709.12 states that property must be used exclusively for charitable purposes. But as this court observed in questioning of the commissioner, in 5709.121, property is deemed to be used exclusively for charitable purposes if it meets the purposes of the statute. Cincinnati Nature Center in 1976, this court set forth the analysis to be used in applying that provision, and that was further used in both the Cincinnati Community Colel case and the Community Health Partners case, and again applied the three-part test that I referred to in my initial comments. First of all, the board looked to see whether the Rural Health Collaborative is a charitable institution. It looked at its purposes, first of all, purposes that are to enhance the quality, availability, and efficiency of comprehensive health care in South Central Ohio, and identifying and addressing health care needs which can most effectively be addressed on a collaborative basis. The board then looked at the facts that were presented, all the activities, and even Mr. Ebersole admitted that there were other activities involved here. And based on that record, the board determined, as a matter of fact, as this court correctly observed, that the Rural Health Collaborative is a charitable institution.
What are those activities that the...
The activities that were done have to relate to community health events. They relate to obtaining grants to help fund community efforts to improve health. It enables the members, this is a membership organization, to come together and talk about common issues. This is a poor area. It's not an area where resources are unlimited. And so they can come together and determine what is the best way to address these issues, who's going to do that, how can we come together to work on that. All of those activities are done without charge to the various people that participate in them, save for the dialysis treatments. They're open to the community at large, and they all focus on improving the health in that area. Now, the commissioner may disagree on the weight to be afforded to that evidence, but that's not the test. The board made its decision, and as this court observed, that's a factual determination that will not be second-guessed. The board then looked at the record and said, this property is made in furtherance of and incidental to its purposes. The board said the test is the relationship between the use of the property and the purposes of the institution. And clearly, I'm sorry.
How does this case distinguishable from the Northeast Psychiatric Institute case?
Your Honor, that's a very good question, and I think this is the distinguishing feature. First of all, in Northeast Ohio Psychiatric, there were two main activities. One was leasing a building at market rates to another institution, and the second activity was providing health professionals on a leased arrangement at market rates. Neither of those factors is present here today. What we have is an institution that is organized for charitable purposes. The lease that we have here was not at market rate, but was intended to cover the costs, and clearly it hasn't done that. Now, the commissioner may argue that, well, depreciation is a non-cash cost, but this court and community health professionals recognize that depreciation was an appropriate cost to consider in looking at that, whether or not somebody was a nonprofit institution. And so those are the differences, and that's why Northeast Ohio simply doesn't apply here. If I may turn to some of the commissioner's arguments, I think we've set the outline in our brief sufficiently as to how the board reached its decision with a disciplined application of the statute. The commissioner characterizes this case as an outlier, citing two cases that are nowhere cited in any of its materials that are filed with the court. But we would suggest that those cases are the outlier because, as the commissioner is trying to do here, they ignored the relevant statute that the taxpayer was relying on. 5709.121A2. What does the statute require? What does the record provide? In this case, the commissioner's arguments really fall into three main categories. First, it questions the BTA's findings and conclusions throughout its brief and throughout its argument. Secondly, the commissioner has failed to address the express application of 5709.121A2. And most importantly, not once in its merit brief did it mention either the Community Health Partners case or the Cincinnati Community Colel case, the two most recent decisions of this court that apply this statute. And thirdly, it claims that the prior decision in DCI is controlling precedent for this case. Regarding the BTA's factual determinations, I think we've already talked a little bit about that. Unless the court has further questions, I think it's very apparent that when a party files a 50-page brief and devotes 47 pages to arguing conclusions and facts, that it's trying to second-guess those factual determinations. With respect to failing to address 5709.121A2 and the two cases, we point out that the three-prong test in Cincinnati Nature Center is very clear. It's very clear-cut that that's the test to be applied, and that's the test that the board applied here. Tax commissioner hasn't disputed.
Take you back just a second to the issue that we started out with, because Cincinnati Nature Center kind of reminded me of it. We've got this situation here where we clearly have a lease in this case, correct?
Yes.
And we have this issue of A1 versus A2. And you're saying first that this is only raised for the first time by the commissioner at the court? Is that the first time, or was it?
Yes, Your Honor, that is our position.
Okay. And what had that provision been cited by the commissioner earlier? Would there have been something else that your client would have undertaken to prove that would have changed the way you litigated the case?
Your Honor, I don't think it would change the factual presentation that we would have made, but certainly there would have been an opportunity to fully brief and argue that legal issue as to whether or not the presence of a lease means that that Rural Health Collaborative cannot proceed under 5709.121A2. Now, in our brief, we did point out to many prior decisions that involved leases, and in fact, in a couple of those decisions, the commissioner conceded that was meeting the control requirement. And so we're a little bit perplexed why now all of a sudden the different position, which makes it, again, difficult when this is presented for the first time before this court. I'd also direct this court's attention to the discussion in Cincinnati Community Call-Out at paragraph 21, because that gets, I'm jumping ahead a little bit to whether or not DCI controls in this case, but it also, I think, is illuminating in part on this issue. And that's the reason why the prior DCI case is not controlling here. In Cincinnati Community Call-Out, there were two cases. The first one involved the tax year of 1998 and two properties. This court determined that it could qualify as an educational institution, remanded the board to determine whether or not the exemption was appropriate. In that case, the statute in question was 5709.121A1. The subsequent case involved not only those two properties, but also a third property, and also did not involve 5709.121A1, but rather involved 5709.121A2. And this court recognized that the prior decision of the board did not control the second decision because we had a different statute that was in question. There was a different legal analysis that had to be undertaken. And so that, we think, is the main reason why the case does not control. But in addition, the record that was presented in this case showed not only additional information to the board that allowed the board to make a decision, but also included the record from the prior case, which the tax commissioner submitted. And the Board of Tax Appeals, looking at all of that, made the determination that, A, we've got a different party in interest, we have a different statute, we have different facts that are presented here. And it's important to note that what this court held in DCI was not that DCI is not a charitable institution, but rather what it held was that it was not unreasonable, based on the record in that case, for the board to conclude that it was not charitable. That's a very different determination than this court saying that in all instances DCI is not charitable. And that's why DCI does not control the result of this case that was presented. Lastly, if we might, again, I want to go back to the second point of the statute that's an issue here, 5709.121A2, and the two cases, Cincinnati Community Call-Out and Community Health Professionals. Interestingly enough, the commissioner does not look at the analysis under that statute. He can't, because he loses. In his merit brief, he does not cite either of those two cases. In his reply brief, he cites, I believe it's Cincinnati Community Call-Out one time. The reason he can't argue with those cases is because those cases are fatal to his claims. In those cases, they indicated that 5709.121A2 defines what is exclusively charitable for purposes of 5709.12. It's a statutory definition, as this court observed earlier this morning, and using that test, it determines what is exclusive. It also points out in those cases that primary use, substantial use, whatever kind of use we want to call it, really doesn't matter. The question is, does that use further the exempt purpose? And clearly, Your Honor, in this case it does, We have an area of the state that is underserved with a deadly disease. For-profit entities won't enter that market. The record indicates that. We have persons who cannot afford care, who are on Medicare and Medicaid. And by the way, we should point out that there's evidence in the record that Medicare and Medicaid would reimburse approximately $200 per treatment, but that in 2006, the cost per treatment was $735. So even if they are reimbursed some cost, there clearly is giving services to people who cannot afford to pay for those services. There is a charitable use if it's required. We'd suggest it isn't. The analysis should be, is the use of a dialysis clinic on a nonprofit basis, does that further the exempt purpose of the Rural Health Collaborative? And clearly it does. How is DCI there? DCI is there because the collaborative didn't have the expertise to do it itself and brought somebody else in to use that property for one purpose. For these reasons, we believe the decision of the board is reasonable and lawful, and it should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Engel. Mr. Ebersole, you've reserved 43 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to make two brief points. The first, in response to my colleague on the other side's speculative point that no one has been turned away for inability to pay. This court rejected that argument once before in DCI at paragraph 34, but more fundamentally, the record here doesn't support that claim. As I mentioned, only 1% of the charges have been written off. It's showing that there's a very low amount of indigent care, if any, being provided on the property, and that claim just hasn't been substantiated, as it was not in the earlier case. Secondly, the community health professionals in the Kalel case are not extensively discussed because they're simply in apposite to this case. Community health professionals' case addressed a situation where there had already been a determination that the entity was a charitable institution and that there was charitable activity being conducted. We don't have that. We have the opposite from the DCI case. And the Kalel case, again, is also an apposite. It is a very modest case that does not find any property exempt. It simply remanded the case back to the board to determine the proper standard or to apply the proper standard.
Thank you, Mr. Ebersole. Your time has expired.
Thank you.
This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.
All rise.